It's January in an odd-numbered year at the outset of a new decade. That means Indiana's 150 lawmakers have returned to the State House to craft a biennial state budget and draw decennial district maps. That, however, is pretty much where normality starts and stops. Thanks to the pandemic, Hoosier lawmakers have altered their schedules, their meeting spaces, and perhaps most significantly, their expectations. Hi, I'm John Schwanis, and this is Indiana Lawmakers. Every week for the next 4 months, we'll do our best to keep you apprised of what's happening and not happening in our state's capital. We'll start with the leaders of the General Assembly's four legislative caucuses, so don't go away. Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house. As I promised at the top of the program, we're starting the 40th season of Indiana Lawmakers and our coverage of the General Assembly's 2021 session with the leaders of the four legislative caucuses. House Speaker Todd Houston, a Fishers Republican. House Minority Leader Phil Giaquinta, a Fort Wayne Democrat. Senate President Pro Tem Roderick Bray, a Martinsville Republican. And Senate Minority Leader Greg Taylor, an Indianapolis Democrat. And I thank you all very much for being here for this roundtable discussion, which is actually now more of a big square room discussion. But nevertheless, I appreciate your taking the time. I think it would be folly for us to start with anything other than perhaps the assault on our nation's capital, because as we tape this, full disclosure, we're less than 24 hours away from that event. Todd Houston, your reaction to what we saw.
Disappointed and sad. I'm probably like a lot of Hoosiers. I didn't sleep very well or very much last night. And I think I dealt with the fact that, you know, this isn't what our democracy is about. Our democracy is about peaceful transitions of power. Violence is just unacceptable. It's just simply put unacceptable. And we should demand and expect better. And I think all of us were just disappointed, saddened, and just so frustrated with the events yesterday.
Now, one of Indiana's two U.S. senators, Mike Braun, started the day saying he would contest or oppose the certification of the Electoral College outcome. He ended the day after the insurrection, after the assault, by backing away from that. You know him because before he was in the U.S. Senate, he spent 3 years in your caucus. Just 3 years ago, he was one of your colleagues. You know him. Did he end up in the right place as far as you're concerned?
I think Senator Braun ended up in the right place.
And as long as we're talking about Republicans' actions, let me ask you, Senator President Pro Tem Roderick Bray, did he end up in the right place?
Yes, I think so. And let me just say, too, I was filled with sadness last night as well and sat down and talked to my boys about how this works and how important the peaceful transition of power is and how important elections are and that our nation have confidence in those elections. You know, there were some things to dispute about this election. Those went to court, and we're a country of rules and laws, and we need to follow those. And a smooth transition and faith and confidence in elections is bigger than any one president or any particular issue, and I think we all need to keep that in mind. It was a bad day for America yesterday.
And I suppose there is, it's tempting perhaps to say this is a Washington, even though the states were integral to this debate or this controversy, to say, oh, that's a Washington Capitol Hill issue. That doesn't happen here. And yet many of the people who have voiced concerns about a government that they think is somehow rigged and it doesn't work for them and it's all the deep state, et cetera, some of those folks are here in Indiana. Will the tenor, do you think, Phil Giaquinta, be any different this session because of not only what we saw yesterday, but just the polarization that preceded this presidential contest?
Well, I think it starts with leadership. What I've been seeing over the past several weeks since the election ended, starting at the top, frankly, with President Trump, is a message that, you know, the election was rigged. And all these sorts of things that I've heard from him and others, including you're right, members of the Indiana delegation, and that's too bad. I mean, that's where it starts, and people follow what they hear sometimes. They follow that sort of leadership.
Does it affect, do you think, this session? I mean, are you going to be hearing some of that?
Well, I tell you what, on compared to what we saw yesterday versus what happened in the House chambers on Monday, where we certified peacefully the results of the governor's race, I think we here in Indiana, in the House, particularly, and in the Senate as well, you know, we showed how things are done. I've been thinking about this last night. I've been working on elections since I was in the eighth grade, and my job was to get my fellow eighth graders to get out there and hand out stuff for my brother for a city council race. And that was back in 1979. We won. I thought, well, this is going to be great. Well, guess what?
Talk about a career politician. 1980
was a big 1980 was a big Republican year, and I thought, you know what? You're going to win some, and you're going to lose some. And that's just the way you go. That's the way it goes, and you learn to govern from the wins and losses. And I think it's called on all of us to lead by example and set the example, and I hope we do that here in Indiana.
And Senator Greg Taylor, do you and your colleagues feel safe? I mean, I'm old enough to remember when there was basically you could walk in and out of any exit or entrance at the State House, you know, without being questioned. Clearly, that's not the case now. There is a level of security. Is it enough? Do you feel that more needs to be done as we continue this session?
Well, I hope we do not have to increase the security at the State House. It is the people's house, and they should be free to come to the house that they built. But the circumstances of yesterday, I believe, is something that we all should take heed of and understand that this country is at a sensitive time. We're at a time in this country where we need some leadership to show that these things, even if we disagree, that we can work things out. One of the things that I bring to the table, and I think a lot of people might understand this, is I've been in this position quite a long time. There's a lot of disappointment that I've been through, things that I think was not fair, sometimes even based on the color of my skin. But we push forward, and what we can do, I think this is a time for opportunity to show the country that Indiana will not be subject to that kind of rhetoric or those types of actions. So hopefully we don't have to get to the point where we need extra security, because we show the country, as well as the Hoosiers, that we can do better and work together.
Well, Hoosiers have been blessed by leadership as far back, good period of time. Adults, you're all adults in the room, and I think civility has been, it's maybe those Hoosier roots, you know, there's a certain sort of decorum that comes with, and I applaud all of you for that.
You have to look at people. I mean, you know, I have tremendous respect for Leader Giaquinta. I have tremendous respect for Senator Taylor. And you know, we will disagree on things passionately at times, but that doesn't change the underlying respect that you have to have for your fellow, not just legislator, but your fellow citizen. And too often times in the discussion, and I don't want to point out East, but certainly feels that way in Washington, D.C., that's forgotten. And I feel privileged to serve in a body in which I can get to know people like Phil Giaquinta, people like Greg Taylor, and so many others who, again, we may not always agree, but we can respect and hopefully, you know, in most instances, we do find common agreement.
If you're keeping a scorecard, that's three IOUs for when it's the tenth part of the session later on in the budget negotiations. One more Washington question before we get back to what you all are here to talk about, which is what's happening here in Indianapolis. But, you know, we went into this presidential cycle by saying, hey, Indiana's got a real advantage here because we've got Mike Pence, former governor. He's going to be, you know, he's got the president's ear. He's the vice president. He's got clout. We're going to have an advantage. Come the 20th, when he's no longer vice president, is there anything you can point to that Indiana's going to be worse off? Do we lose anything?
You know,
tangible?
I think there probably are some things. There are not things that come to the public eye very often. But you know, having a vice president in Washington D.C. and also what comes with that is a lot of other talent from the state of Indiana had gone to Washington D.C. Seema Verma is one that I can point to, and you know, having those
Medicare policy.
Yes, thank you. And you know, having those kind of contacts, and the governor in particular can pick up the phone and ask a question or advocate for something that needs to happen in the state of Indiana. Some of those things are nuanced, but there really is some advantage there. And not to say that we're not going to be just fine over the next 4 years and into the future, but it's nice when that happens. Actually,
All right, well, let's get back to, I was going to say back to the normal, but I can't really get back to the normal because the session is about COVID-19 at the start, which makes it by definition abnormal. As I mentioned at the top of the program, there are physical changes in your meeting space. The Senate's on, you know, divvied up into two floors. Some people are in the gallery. You all in the House have moved to Indiana Government Center South, larger space. Committee hearings may be done, you know, by video with people testifying in one room and you all are committee members in another room. Is this workable?
I'm going to do something that you don't want us to do, which is go back and just make a quick comment on your previous question. Which
we're going to be here.
I know.
You can do that. Go ahead.
Well, we do have Pete Buttigieg as a Hoosier that will be part of the transportation secretary.
So any potholes on that is who we call, right?
We may have some access. You never know. I think we've had some good practice over the summer with Zoom meetings and things like that as far as legislators getting sort of accustomed to maybe not meeting face-to-face. I think just over the last, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 years of technology and things like that where we are able to communicate via text messages and things like that are just going to have to be sort of the norm this year. And it's certainly going to be a challenge. And I think all of us, the leaders here, have really would like to commend LSA, who've done a great job of helping us get this set up to make this as workable as possible. And I think we're off to an okay start. We'll just have to see how it goes and work our way through it.
Of course, the House will be meeting one day a week, so the schedule itself is altered. We've got the plastic barriers up and so forth. Are we going to be here into the summer, do you think, Senator? Or is this, granted, there will probably be stoppages at some point if we have flare-ups of the illness. Or is April 29th going to be when we can all, can I go ahead and book the vacation now? Or is that, presuming I can travel, get on a plane and go anywhere, I don't know.
I don't think any of us should book any travel plans. That would be a choice that we have to make, but not something that I would do with a higher probability that likelier than not, we're going to have to delay because of some quarantine needs for citizens as well as legislators. We have a very vulnerable population in the Indiana General Assembly, and we need to take it seriously. And I'm glad that we've been able to make some changes to keep us socially distanced.
Although neither chamber is requiring mask wearing. You're strongly encouraging it. You're asking people to self-report if they, but that won't necessarily be public if somebody does test positive. But presumably that will all, I guess there's much as you can do without forcing people to do things that they simply are not willing to do. Let me ask you, Senator, you've talked about transparency. You've said that regardless of this new normal where people are maybe testifying in a different room by camera, that's still going to be a transparent work that the people can feel invested in. Again, the mechanics, how do you do it? How can you be sure that you can do that?
First of all, it is very vitally important that we do it. One, the transparency, and two, the fact that people have the ability and opportunity to engage with us. Because I've always said that we make better legislation that has been fully vetted, and that means people coming to us and having conversations and saying, you know what, this is going to affect me in this way, or this is an unintended consequence of the bill that you've just drafted, those types of things. And so we will have all the things in place that we've always had, and including over the last few years we've improved that. So any committee hearing or our session will all be streamed out live, so anybody can watch it from any point in the state or actually any point in the world, frankly. And for the committee hearings, while you're not going to be in the same room as the actual committee, the people that will be able to come and testify, just like before, anybody who wants to come and testify can, will be there in a different room, all done for the purposes of spacing. But you still have the same back and forth. And so all that will continue to be the case. And we also take letters and videos and recordings of testimony on certain bills for committees and things. So you're going to have all that input that we have always had in the past is just going to look a little different, and it's going to be a little more complicated and take a little longer to do. As we watched kind of the committee's work yesterday, it's just more work, and it takes a little bit longer. So that's one of the reasons that I've told the senators we have a bill limit of 10 this year, when in a long session we don't normally have that, because it's just going to take us longer to vet those. But we're going to make sure that we continue to have that transparency and that engagement that's so helpful to us.
You know, we talked about some of the tension, not just in the state of Indiana, but within your own caucus, about those who think that the restrictions have gone too far, they don't wear I think you have two members perhaps in the caucus that don't wear masks. Some of those folks say, and if one has introduced a resolution, Curt Nisley from the northern part of the state, that, you know, emergency orders be damned, we're done. The governor can't do it anymore. Now, you have sent that to the legislative equivalent of quarantine, which is the Rules Committee, not to be seen the rest of the session, I presume. But there are other bills that will do some of the similar sort of things, maybe not as drastic, but maybe allow you all to call yourselves into session and so forth. What's going to happen with the attempts to curb the governor's emergency powers?
Well, first of all, on the safety issue, I just want to thank all of our members. We're trying to be flexible, and we'll adjust and monitor as appropriately. So these are unique times, and we're dealing with a unique situation. We'll continue to do that. On the executive orders, look, I think, you know, there's a whole series of things through the pandemic that we've learned from, things that we would never have imagined. And I think Governor Holcomb's done an outstanding job managing through these extraordinary times. That being said, it showcased, you know, this pandemic happened to begin coming in our country and our state almost the exact same time the legislative session ended. And he was very collaborative, I think, with Senator Bray and I and others, and I feel like, you know, there was no need for a special session now. But if the situation was different, if the circumstances were different, this showcased and highlighted that there was no way for the legislative body to get back into session during these emergency
situations. Because the governor calls a special session. If he doesn't want to,
right,
you can't
so,
do anything
so
about
we're,
it.
So there's an appropriate balance. We're going to work on that appropriate balance and figure out what it is, because I think, you know, legislative input is important. And at these times, it needs to be ensured, and we'll work together to get to the right
spot. So when you say balance, it's probably somewhere between what Curt Nisley is suggesting and perhaps the notion to keep it where it is now.
Yeah.
We have less than 10 minutes, I think, to go, and so much to cover. Virtually every issue is in some way shaped by COVID-19. Let's talk about some of the bills that we think are going to be the first to be addressed. They already have been the first to be addressed. One is, right now, schools, because so many of their students are attending class virtually, when it comes to school count next month, which is determinant of how much money public school districts get, right now they'd be dinged because they'd be counted as not students that are in the classroom. You guys really think you need to fix this by before the count day. Is that going to be the first thing that goes through? And is there universal support for this on both sides? I mean, I'll ask you first.
10-03, I think I have the number right. Yeah, it'll fly out of Ways and Means with unanimous support, and it should, and I think it'll come to the House floor and then pass over.
Anybody disagree? So we'll try to get through.
I agree.
Yeah, everybody agree?
Bill
All right, we have
time.
Agreement. Let's see. Okay, that's where it stops. Another one, Senate Bill 1, deals with liability for businesses, for long-term care facilities, hospitals, so that they'd be immune to civil litigation related to COVID-19. You all, on the Republican side and the state chamber and others, say that's unnecessary. Others, trial lawyers and others, say maybe it's necessary, but it needs to be recrafted more narrowly. Is that going to happen?
Absolutely.
That's absolutely going
to
happen?
Absolutely.
And it's called Senate Bill 1, which means that's something
to be said.
It's House Bill.
There's something to be said for that.
It's House Bill 1002 for us.
So you both say, what do you guys, I mean, Are you going to shock me and say that this is going to be universal support on this one too?
Well, we'll see. I mean, I think I'd like to see I haven't read the bill yet. I'll see what the discussion, how it goes. But we were just concerned about that it wanted to be as narrowly focused as possible to COVID. I will say sometimes we pass these bills sort of, is there really a problem out there? I mean, I think I've seen less than maybe around 1,000 case lawsuits so far, and we've had a million cases, and I'm not sure if it's really all that necessary, but certainly want to, and we've seen small businesses struggle, and that this is maybe a way to help protect them as well. I think it'll be a good debate. We'll just have to see.
And I see there's a lawyer down there at the end of the room.
There's another one on the other side of the aisle, too. I believe that there's a way to have a balance, as the speaker said, on this type of legislation, but we got to be careful because Senate Bill 1 is a priority for the majority in the Senate, but our mantra as Senate Democrats is about the people. And if we're going to put something up that quickly, that strongly to support businesses, and some small businesses are the people, but we got to look out for the people too. So that's the balance that we're looking for in the Senate Democrat.
You guys are on a roll. We just could hold the session here. We could save a lot of time and effort.
I think
we were distanced. We got the aerial mics here. All right, budget. You really have to do two things. You have to get district maps based on the decennial census, which you don't have that data yet, so we'll give you a little bit of a break there. But you have to have a biennial budget, too. The budget forecast, the revenue forecast we saw last month, wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. I mean, 2.2% in the first year of the biennium, 3%. Can you hold K-12 education? That's, everybody seems to state that's the priority, and the goal is to keep them even at least at the same level, if not more, as the governor has suggested. Is that doable?
I think so. And I think it'll be, you know, K-12 education has been a priority of our caucus. It's been a priority of our last few budgets. It'll continue to be.
And priority for you all as well. I mean, that's
absolutely.
Teacher, of course, the governor had the task force to look at teacher compensation. That came back with a price tag of $600 million. Now, that's not all state spending. It might be referenda. It might be a little of this, a little of that. Is this the year for teacher salary increases, do you think, Senator?
Well, you're not going to see, you know, last budget in 2019, we added $763 million new dollars to K-12 education. We saw every district except for maybe three or four, I don't remember now, get teacher pay raises, and that was wonderful news for all of us. You're not going to see $763 million new dollars or even $600 million added to the budget this year because we simply will not have it. But there's some other things that we can do with regard to trying to help them with health care and some other things, too. So we're going to continue to attack those things and try and improve it.
One of the many, I think there were 37 several dozen recommendations that the task force came up with. One was an increase in the state's personal income tax, a modest increase. And there's also a push for an increase in the cigarette tax, maybe some for monetary reasons or budgetary reasons, also maybe for health modification reasons. Is this the year that the no new tax pledge gets frayed around the edges, do you think?
Well, let me first say with regards to teacher pay, I do think it's...
You just keep going back to... You got to keep with the pace, but go ahead.
The show was getting boring, so I thought we
might... I understand. I understand. Blame the host.
Yeah, so, no, I think the thing that came out of that report was where Indiana teachers stand, and we're ranked with 38th, I think, in pay in the country. So we really do need to do something
about it.
And
we used to be in 2000, we were second in the country.
Yeah, I mean, every year we push this off, we just keep falling farther and farther behind. So I do think it's important that we really kind of look at that report and see what we can do to help teachers who are doing an outstanding job.
And
leave it to me to get everything excited. Listen, this is an interesting discussion. Because I agree with my colleagues, we did add money to the K-12 budget. The question is where. We can sit here and we can talk about what we've done to support K-12 education, but the real balance comes when we talk about educating those people who need the education opportunities the most. And those schools, the traditional public schools and the poor districts with people who are already struggling. This pandemic has unveiled the struggle. We continue to delineate and lower the amount that those students receive per student. And if we don't do something this year, the effects of what we do this year to make sure that teachers are compensated to the point where they want to be a teacher, kids want to be a teacher, we're going to be in trouble in 5 to 6 years from now.
And I'm guessing, again, nobody's saying the $600 million bite that will be taken out of the apple this time. And as the senator points out, there are lots of recommendations. One would be increased use of referenda, but that sort of is a have-not situation. Are we going to be doing well just to keep things, K-12 funding overall, or do you think we're going to see specific efforts to pinpoint salaries, even though that's not in your purview right now? I mean, that is a local board, unless you change that.
I'm a former school local, former local school board member. This is a local control
issue. I know you are.
That's
the first time you ever came to solicit my vote.
Knocking your door. This is a local school issue, and we need to support it. We're important partners in it, but local school districts determine the number of teachers they have. They determine the benefits. They determine the pay. They determine all the factors appropriately. And I think that's the thing that, we have over half the state budget goes to K-12 education. Over $7.5 billion goes in the K-12 tuition support. And we will continue to increase that amount. But when it comes down to specifics, those decisions are made appropriately at the local level.
All right. Well, we didn't need your 10-bill limit because of time. I think I have imposed one or two bill limit, and we reached it. So I apologize for the shortness of time. Again, I greatly appreciate the time you took. Thank you for your service to the state. As far as I'm concerned, your profession is a very honorable one, and Hoosiers should be appreciative of the leadership that we have in the General Assembly. Again, my guests have been House Speaker Todd Houston of Fishers, a Republican, House Minority Leader Phil Giaquinta, a Fort Wayne Democrat, Senate President Pro Tem Roderick Bray, a Martinsville Republican, and Senate Minority Leader Greg Taylor, an Indianapolis Democrat. Should businesses be held liable if their employees or customers catch the coronavirus? We'll hash it out on the next Indiana Lawmakers. Time now for our weekly conversation with longtime Indiana Lawmakers analyst Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, part of the Hanna News Service. Ed, good to have you back. We've been around a long time. Looking back, the craziness, of course, we saw in Washington this week. Anything in your memory close to that that happened in the Indiana State House?
Well, we've had some crazy incidents, you know, people climbing on ladders and desks to protest bills and budgets and stuff like that.
Those are just members, though. Those are not onlookers.
Right. Yeah, they were duly elected somehow. But we did have a little incident back in 1988 after the election when there were some questions about how the House of Representatives was going to run with 50 Democrats and 50 Republicans. And we spent basically a week peacefully, although some would have said, well, there are some dramatic moments, peacefully deciding how the balance of power would be divvied out in 1989. And that 1989 session may be the closest parallel to what we see in 2021.
The so-called stereo speakers, I remember it well. Looking ahead to 2021, I mean, we're only a few days into the session. How is COVID-19 and all of these precautions going to affect the process?
Dramatically, John, and you heard the leaders talk about the physical changes, and the physical changes are going to be manifested, I think, in policy as well. It's going to be very difficult for people to literally go from desk to desk and chat with each other and informally kind of work out deals. We're going to have a real problem in terms of getting people together outside the legislative chamber, as it were, in order to negotiate. We're going to have a lot more attention paid to fewer bills. There's just not going to be time and the ability to consider as many bills. So you're going to have a lot of different amendments thrown in at the last minute to other pieces of legislation. And you're going to have a lot of bills that are going to be pretty unwieldy. And you're also going to have to deal with the likelihood of interruptions from cases of COVID, with particularly, I think they're more concerned about the staff than legislators, because frankly, the fiscal staff and the Legislative Services Agency and the key fiscal committees are a lot more indispensable than legislators.
And don't forget the interruption of March Madness, which will be interesting when people are fighting for the same hotel rooms, I'm guessing.
Right.
Are we done on regular
hotel rooms?
Done by April 29th, real quick, or is this doomed to be a special session? Real quick.
Well, I don't know that it's doomed. I think it's destined to be, and I think that it'll probably be that voluntarily, and I think part of that is going to be because the census data for redistricting is going to come in so late. We're used to having it by December 31st. They're now talking about February 9th, and that February 9th date, I think, is going to be pretty optimistic.
Very good, Ed. We have to leave it there. We'll see you next week. Thanks so much. For more information, episode streams, and other extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwanis, and I thank you for joining us. Until next week, take care.